infrastructure and also the monitoring and evaluation. The meeting is today. We are hosting the Public Service Commission under the stewardship of Professor Mukedi to present to us the annual report of the Public Service Commission. And without any waste of time, indeed, you are all welcome. Any apologies that you want to register, Professor Mukedi?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, the only apology that we have received is for Honorable Dango. He will join us later. He's got they are working in his house, the park. So he will join us later.
Oh, brilliant. I think that is noted. Without any waste of time, then.
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members of the Select Committee, we really appreciate the opportunity to come and account and present our annual report. I'll just make some opening remarks, after which I will ask our team, because I'm here with fellow commissioners, I'm here also with the Secretariat, in other words, the CFO, the DDGs are here to support us. The DG has apologized because she's in another meeting with the UNDP and several departments. I have had to leave that meeting and make sure that I'm here. In terms of our annual report, I just want to say that the key things that we want to present, or which are reflected in this annual report, are our key achievements, which we met all of them, and where we missed one target. It's not anything more than the self-imposed target of payment within 14 days of any of our service providers, when in fact the legislation says it should be 30 days. But we felt that we should lead by example. But the explanation as to why that happened in the midst of COVID and the unit that was affected by COVID is provided in the report itself. And what is most important, besides all those other things, is the fact that PSC is on the verge of filling all the vacant posts nationally. We do have all but one commissioner, and I did have an interaction and correspondence with the chair of the portfolio committee, who has promised that they will conclude that process before the end of the financial year. And also provincially, Mpumalanga, we've had to go and have a meeting with the speaker in Mpumalanga to ensure that vacancy there is closed. In Gauteng, they've done interviews. We may be joined by the newly appointed commissioner there. So going forward, I do think that we will have the full complement of the commission itself. Perhaps more important is the fact that PSC has been very much central in driving a process of professionalization, working with the coordinating entity, which is the National School of Government. Only a few days ago that the cabinet approved this framework for professionalization of public service. And we do think that this will go a long way in advancing and fulfilling the core mandate of the PSC, which is ensuring that we have effective and efficient public service, which also adheres to the principles and values of the Constitution itself. So that in itself, we amplify that year, but since the report was concluded, we've had these major developments, which is a milestone and probably a game changer. By the time we meet next time we will be talking about how the implementation across all the spheres of government, national, provincial, and local, and across all the three branches of government, executive, legislative, as well as the judiciary, so that that building of the state capacity is at the heart of many things that we are doing. PSC itself is undergoing repositioning of itself and even review of its own, targets, so that we have a greater impact. We are reviewing even some of the approaches. But for now, I will then invite our DDG. Is it DDG Malazi or DDG Dr. Sidibe, who is presenting the next segment of the annual report? And then our CFO will immediately go straight into the financials. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson of the Select Committee on Transport, Public Service and Administration, Public Works and Infrastructure, members of the Select Committee, Chairperson of the Public Service Commission, and all protocol observed and officials who are present. I will present the PSC's annual report for the 2021-2022 on behalf of our Director General. Briefly, we will also provide the committee with the reflections on our key achievements, a summary of performance across the various branches that constitute the PSC, as well as the financial performance and audit outcome. I will be assisted by our Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Momeka.
My apology, DDG, if you can just show your face for 5 minutes because this is streaming. Thank you.
Okay, where's the video? This is I'm trying to get that video.
There you are, you can continue.
Thank you very much. Technology challenged, I'm using someone's computer. Can I proceed with the presentation, Honorable Chair?
Yes, you can proceed.
Thank you very much, sir. Right, in terms of our budget, the PSC for the financial year under review, we had a budget of approximately 286 million. And this funds our entire operations at the national office and the 9 provincial offices. From a perspective of commissioners, whilst we have 14 commissioners in terms of the Public Service Commission Act, the chairperson of the PSC has already indicated that some of these positions are vacant. And in terms of the audit outcome, which Mr. Momeka will give us a full breakdown on, we have received a clean audit third year in a row. And overall, we have achieved 96% of our audited performance targets, which is 22 out of the 23 targets. I will explain how those targets are calculated later on. My slide is not moving. Apologies, my computer has just frozen. Thank you. The reflections in terms of our achievements are as follows. One of the things that we have done as the PSC is to issue a circular on unlawful instructions to executive authorities and heads of departments but this was not just meant for this level of leadership. They were also requested in the circular to share the contents of the circular with employees in their departments. We have also played a very key role as an institution in the development of the National Implementation Framework on the Professionalization of the Public Service. I'm sure a lot of the developments in this regard have been noted as they are widely reported in the media, and the chairperson has also alluded to that. We have facilitated the performance evaluation of several heads of departments, those who are qualifying, both the DG in the presidency and some HODs in the premier's offices. This is in line with the role and the mandate of the PSC in terms of the HOD evaluation PMDS framework. We have issued a number of articles on topical issues, some relating to COVID-19 in the areas of education or its impact and how to navigate it, human resource management, as well as labor relations prescripts and practices. We have also intervened and engaged with various departments to ensure that suppliers are paid within 30 days. And this is a function that we continue to perform on an ongoing basis. We have also conducted a very successful webinar on the effectiveness, efficiency, and value for money in the area of procurement. The PSC has also intervened on behalf of citizens to facilitate access to services during the COVID lockdown. Whilst we know that the 2021-2022 period, we were going through a less stringent lockdown levels, we do note that economic activities were still very much restricted and a lot of people did lose their jobs. It was important for the organization to make sure that those who are supposed to receive the 350 grant receive, and to also ensure that water is made available to affected communities, especially around the KZN area. We've also participated in various events with a number of strategic partners, among those including the South African, we have participated in a number of engagements with strategic partners for South Africa, among those including the European Union Strategic Partnership Dialogue, the University of South Africa and the UNDP office, as well as the National School of Government. We've also continued to publish what we refer to as the Pulse of the Public Service, which is a brief quarterly news bulletin from the PSC that allows us to report on the work that we do, as well as to comment on other contemporary issues. We've also conducted qualitative evaluations of departments on how they comply with the constitutional values and principles, and this has culminated in the publication of our annual report called the State of the Public Service Report, or SOPS. And we've also conducted inspections in the education facilities in all the 8 provinces. We've also done inspections in other areas looking at issues of social distancing and health and safety, especially in the schooling sector. That was during COVID. We will also later on address some of the inspections and citizens' engagements that we have conducted as an organization. And overall, as I indicated earlier, that our performance was overall 96%. The 96% was arrived at as follows. The stats are very clear. The point that I just want to indicate to the committee here is standalone outputs. They are constituted by a range of outputs, some of them extremely complex, some of them not too complex, but too many. And when you deliver on all of those, then the report is that you have delivered on a particular output. If you have 50 outputs to deliver for to make up one indicator, you miss one. You have basically missed an entire target indicator. So it's important that when our performance is assessed, we have this understanding in mind that these targets are basically a consolidation of a lot of deliverables in all the areas. So the only area where we have not achieved the target, like the chairperson said, was in program one administration. But this one, in terms of the set rules, we have achieved it. But in terms of us setting a very high requirement for ourselves as the organization, we have missed it. And hence, it was agreed with the Auditor General that we will be assessed on the basis of our commitment to paying suppliers within 7 to 14 days. Whilst we might have missed it, to the best of my knowledge, we have still been able to pay most suppliers within a period of 14 to 20 days. Then the briefly program performance in terms of the various programs, I think in the interest of time, maybe I should not take the committee through each and every one of the deliverable. But in this slide, let me highlight exactly the key indicator that we have reported on that we did miss our payment of suppliers within 7 to 14 days. The committee will note that we paid 88% of our suppliers within 7 to 14 days. In terms of the report that we have received from the AG, is that we have performed exceptionally well, because the 12% that we did not pay within 7 to 14 days, we still managed to pay it within an average of about 20 days. 20-25 days. So that is the only one there. Can I admit, because this is blocking? And then I will proceed and say this particular slide is merely indicating exactly what I have referred to. And then I will proceed to program two, which is leadership and management practices. The committee will note that we have achieved most of our targets, or all of our targets. In two of those targets, we did exceed the set targets, which I must place in context that our targets were reduced a bit during COVID. Our normal targets are in the region of 80 to 85%, but during COVID, they were reduced a little bit to 65% and 70%, and that is the reason why we exceeded the targets. However, in the financial year 2022-2023, we have increased the targets back to 85% in this area. In Program 3, Monitoring and Evaluation, we have delivered on all our set targets again. The committee will note, if we look at number one, number of approved state of the public service reports, it is one report, but this report is a culmination of a lot of work by the PSC, work that includes research, the promotion of constitutional values and principles, inspections, citizens forum. It's a lot of work. It's a consolidation of a lot of the work that we do in an annual basis. And the number of evaluation reports on the impact of changed practices, again, these reports are produced after we have done evaluations in a number of departments, and we consolidate those outcomes into few reports just for illustration purposes. So we have done all of those. And another one of our items, that is a consolidation of the work of the PSC, especially around the recommendations that we issue and the extent of implementation, is the last item on the Section 1964E report. It's a requirement in terms of the Constitution that we submit that report. And you can see members that on the promotion of the constitutional values and principles, we have done 21 engagements. These are engagements that are attended by lots of people. In some areas, we are talking about hundreds, where we are targeting employees at different levels of operation in departments, nationally, and in the provinces. And we continue to do this work. We promote the CVPs not just through the promotional workshops, but also in all the work that we do, that when we make findings, we also pronounce on whether the findings that we are making and the recommendations comply with the constitutional values and principles. The last program for integrity and anti-corruption, again, in this program, we have achieved all of our set targets in two areas. We have exceeded the targets. I think the same explanation that I gave before, that says we reduce our targets during COVID, which is why it might look like we overly exceeded the targets. The same reasoning applies. But for 2023, 2024, we have increased our targets back to normality pre the COVID-19 2020 period. But just to indicate in terms of target number one, which is the public administration investigations, the range of investigations that the PSC conducts in this area, they vary. Some of them are fairly straightforward and manageable. Some are extremely complex, and they include multiple areas that require the organization to establish interdisciplinary teams to be able to deal with those investigations. So that is in the nature of the complexity, and all of those will culminate into one target. Again, the financial disclosure framework, the report that we produce this report after consolidating information that we gather from departments and also looking at the reports from the AG. So it is an extensive process that results in us being able to produce this report and also to track what has happened with the outcome of some of the disciplinary processes, where challenges pertaining to the improper use of finances are noted. This last slide, again, it's just giving an overview. The report that we have done around research on professional ethics, specifically in this study, we were looking at the extent of compliance by departments in the promotion of ethics through the establishment of the required ethics infrastructure in terms of the ethics framework that is applicable in the public service. Again, all of this were concluded. And our performance in terms of the past 3 years, it's standing as follows: 2019, 2020, before COVID, we had 100%. 2020, 2021, our performance dropped to 93%. And then 2021, 2022, we have improved to 96%. So I think it is at this stage that I would like to request the CFO to take the committee through the financial report. Mr. Moneka.
Let me take this opportunity to thank the chairperson of the Select Committee on Transport, Public Service and Administration, and Public Works and Infrastructure, Honorable Muimang. And I greet the honorable members of the committee. I'm trying to position my camera so that you can barely see my face. It's a bit dark here. And let me also greet the honorable members. Let me greet the honorable members of the Select Committee, Chairperson of the Public Service Commission. Ladies and gentlemen, I greet you. I will take you through the the slides on finance. I thought my colleagues were going to project, but I'm disabled. Can you just project the slides again, please? I think you can switch off the camera for Dr. Sidney. Yes. If you can go to the slide. Yeah, the next slide. Thank you. If you could offer it for me, the next slide. And then the next one. I won't be long. I apologize for that technical glitch. From the budget of from the actual expenditure of 265.7 million that we have spent during the 2021-2022 financial year, 77% of that which was spent is compensation of employees, and 21% is on goods and services, which is basically our operational costs. I just wish to indicate that the majority of our expenditures are based on operational costs, on compensation of employees, because we are an institution that has got we do our work performed by our employees who conduct the investigations, the research, and so on. Therefore, that is more of our ratio, spending ratio, 77 to 23%. The next slide, please. These are the audited financial statements that we are presenting before your good selves. Just to indicate that from the budget of 286 million that was allocated to the department, we were able to spend 265 million, and which translates to 93% of the budget, and we underspent around about 7%. Therefore, we unfortunately had to surrender 20.5 million back to Treasury. And the variance analysis is provided on the extreme right, where it basically shows that in administration we spend the larger portion of followed by a program for which is IAC. Going to the next slide. So this is a vertical presentation of just what I've shown you. Same budget, the totals are the same. But just to indicate that the majority of our underspending is basically on compensation. The larger portion of which is the vacancies that we had for commissioners during the financial year, which are beyond our control to fill, that 11.8 million. So that's a larger portion of it. I must also indicate that yes. We also experienced some vacancies due to natural attrition for staff, but the larger portion is really attributed to commissioners, which are matters that are in the hands of Parliament, as well as provincial legislatures and the premiers, as well as the presidency. Goods and services, the underspending is mainly a saving, not really an underspending. During that financial year, we were operating from largely from office and also to a certain extent from home. So we did make a huge saving when it comes to monies that were supposed to have been spent when we were in office, but we were operating from home. We've got 10 regional offices, 9 provincial, and also one parliamentary office. And also we saved in those offices on your utility bills, as well as other office-related administration costs. So we regard that mainly as a saving. Also, because it was during that time where there was COVID and we were not traveling a lot. A lot of meetings were held on a platform like this, as we continue to do. But we did not really have a lot of interactions out there with the communities, just to make sure that we do not spread COVID. So there was less traveling, and hence I regard that more as saving rather than underspending. Then I will go to the next slide, just to indicate that it is with really good, it is with pleasure to inform the August committee that we have obtained a third clean audit. Our first clean audit was in 2019-2020. We sustained it in 2020-21, and yet again, we sustained it in 21-22. And for us, it is important because PSC is an institution that prides itself by being custodians of good governance. And part of good governance is clean administration. And therefore, we've got a moral high ground to occupy. We cannot be going around investigating institutions that do not comply, whereas we ourselves do not comply. Therefore, we do not see this clean audit and sustaining it over the years as just a support function. We see it as part of the core business of PSC. I think we've indicated what it means. So we've given you a six-year history. The next slide will basically unpack a bit what is that we have on that clean audit. Maybe the select committee, if they can note that we pride ourselves with paying suppliers within a period of 9 days for 2021-2022 financial year. We know that South Africa has got a lot of small businesses that are doing business with institutions, even big businesses, and it is not fair for these businesses to go under because government doesn't pay fast. So we have put systems in our organization to make sure that we really pay suppliers quite fast. But you can see that the 17 days that we had the previous financial year was as a result of COVID, because there was a lockdown of 3 months where we did not come to work. And that really didn't do good to our good rate of paying within. But we went back to below 10 days, and we will continue to hover around during that those 10 days. Just to also indicate that although we may have appeared to have underperformed on one indicator, which is payment of 13 days between 14 and 7 days, we were too ambitious because in 2019-2020, we paid within 13 days, 7 days. Therefore, we decided to put a very tough target for us, which proved to be a bit of a nightmare during the COVID years. But we still continued to pay all invoices within 30 days, even though only 12% were paid beyond the 7 to 14 days. The next slide is the same graph that shows basically the history of payments. And the next slide is just to conclude, to unpack the audit report, to say to you, honorable members of select committee, to say that the fact that we achieved a clean audit tells us that we did not have audit findings and material errors in our performance report as well as annual financial statements. It shows that the system of internal control that we have put in place and we continue to maintain is robust. And I wish to indicate that during the year under review, there were no transactional expenses that are not desired, irregular, fruitless, unwasteful, and unauthorized. The only unauthorized irregular expenditure that we had was incurred in 2018-2019, and it was for a three-year contract where we did not procure the services through CETA, even though the procurement itself was clean. We did not procure. We were migrating our telephone services, and it was going to take longer for CETA to do that service for us. And the anti-corruption hotline was definitely going to be going down as a result of not being serviced. So a decision was taken to rather continue with the service. So we procured, went on an open tender, and we procured clean. Our only sin was that we did not do with through CETA. We know that there are challenges with CETA. CETA is quite inefficient, and we have requested a permission from the minister who is responsible for CETA, Minister of Digital Communication, to allow PSC to procure, not following the CETA processes. We are awaiting outcomes as a result. just to also indicate that our financial health is quite impressive. We are very viable. So when AG did their financial viability, they gave us a green. There were no cases of employees who were found to have conducted business with the state. We know that there are serious challenges with issues of corruption, and we always judge ourselves by the best standards, and it is important for us to reflect on matters like that. We know that somewhere else there are challenges with matters of PEE procurement and other procurement issues. We remain clean as the system of internal control that has been put in place continues to show that it is working. And I have indicated that we have improved on our days to pay our creditors. We are hopeful that we'll continue to improve. I will hand over to the chairperson of the Public Service Commission. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, CFO. I think we will hand it over back to the Honorable Chairperson so that we can entertain or respond to questions.
Okay.
As and
thank
when
you. Dr. Silva, let me... thank you.
Thank you. Were you done, Chair?
Yes, I'm done to say we are now presenting ourselves for questions so that we can reflect on what is in our annual report.
Thank you, Chairperson of the Public Service Commission. Honorable members, the totality of presentation made to us, performance, and also the audited finances. I will now open the floor for engagement from honorable members to engage with the presentation. Honorable members, my honorable, I've noticed honorable Khai, floor is yours.
Good morning, honorable chair, honorable members, Professor Figeni and his team. Thank you very much. Honorable Chair, thanks to Professor Figen for the presentation of the annual report of PSC. Let me indicate up front, Chair, and also to Professor, we have always not been sure as to whether PSC accounts to the Select Committee. We had to seek legal advice in that respect, and were given a green light that PSC also should report or account to the Select Committee. I'm raising that point because we may not necessarily, speaking for myself, I may not necessarily know exactly whether I won't be conflicting the mandate of the PSC with regard to the question that I will be posing. I'm actually happy with the report, as the CFO is also indicating that with regard to good governance, the institution should set an example. We agree with that statement. My question will not necessarily be mainly on the report, but they will be mainly on the impact that PSC is making with regard to public service in general. One that let's take, for example, the outcomes of the commission that was focusing on the state capture. To what extent then is the PSC going to ensure that going forward, some of the things that are reported that arise from the public service identified by the commission won't happen? I'm not saying they won't happen 100%, but perhaps eliminated or reduction with regard to those things that have been identified. I wanted to also check from time to time the Auditor General, the Office of Auditor General will pick up some of the issues that relate to issues of lack or bad governance with regard to departments, whether at a national or provincial level. I just wanted to check if the commission, I mean the PSC, does that highlight some of the challenges of good governance in departments, and if it does so, what does it do with regard to those? Because when I look at some of the Auditor General's report, there are some challenges that has to do with the issues, the challenges of good governance, especially around issues of procurement. As I indicated earlier, it may not necessarily be part of the mandate, but I just wanted to so you'll pardon me if I'm raising issues that are not necessarily in your space. There was also a report that in the presentation that you assisted with regard to visiting schools to ensure issues of social distances around the issues of COVID-19. What I was interested also in terms of your money, whether it also extend to also looking at the issues of service delivery in schools, challenges of infrastructure, challenges of where there are no learner teacher support materials such as textbook, and there was those challenges in some of the provinces, particularly the Eastern Cape. I know of the Eastern Cape. I'm not sure about other provinces. So I wanted to check if your mandate would extend to investigate those challenges, where the challenges of infrastructure, but you find that millions are returned to treasury because they have not been used. So my question therefore would be whether your mandate also extend into investigating such things, because for me they've got to do with the challenges of good governance. Let me then go back to the issues and some of the that are in the report. The challenge that is raised with regard to the offices not being saved. Next week, I see that is the indication that my network is unstable. So maybe I should switch off, share the camera.
Yes, yes.
The next week we'll be meeting with the CAB in their annual report. So I wanted to be specific so that we can take that opportunity to raise the specific issues that PSC may raise with us to assist to take up those issues with regard to offices not being conducive with regard to occupational health and safety. The other issue I wanted to check as to whether as part of their mandate, the PSC has a role to play with regard to issues of lifestyle audit in the public service in particular. There's also the mention of the whistleblowers. There has been complaints that whistleblowers are not protected. Issue of the health department, I think, if I'm not mistaken, she was the CFO. She was a whistleblower. So what does the institution do in terms of addressing such challenges that has to do with the protection of whistleblowers? I will check.
It looks like the network connectivity is indeed impacting on your ability to finally transfer point home on the high. We'll go back to you. Honorable members, any further questions from your side? Honorable Tim Patterson, what is yours?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm also with low signal, so please interrupt me if I'm not audible, but I'm not going to put my camera on for that very purpose. Thank you for the presentations from the PEC. I'm glad to hear that they generally seem to be achieving their financial targets and their outcomes. The one question I wanted to ask was specific trainings on ethics and ethical guidelines. I noted that the code of conduct or the ethical code of conduct for public servants has not been updated for many years. And what initiatives are in place to actually update that code of conduct? I can't remember the last version, but I do think it's quite possibly maybe over 10 years ago. I can look into my files for that. So what initiatives are in place to work on that, especially in the environment of the recommendations of the Zondo Commission report? And then also on ethical training for public representatives. I know it falls outside of the mandate of the Public Service Commission, but given the fact that public servants work in hand with public representatives, what sort of initiatives is PEC, if they are, considering in that field? And specifically, not just handing out a code of conduct, but actually doing training, workshops, seminars, to basically assist public servants and public representatives with some sort of an insulation. And this carries on from Honorable Chai's question, from the pressures that are placed on public servants and also public representatives by their political superiors or their political higher-ups, to try and induce people or influence people to act in unethical ways. Chairperson, I just believe this is extremely important, as I think it really lies sometimes at the heart of where we have gone wrong as a country in terms of corruption, is not only in the rules. You know, you can have too many rules that enforce ethics, but if there isn't actually a change of heart or a change of mind of the persons involved in the environment, in the ecosystem, the actors, the stakeholders involved, if there's no change of mind there, then sometimes you could possibly be wasting your time. So, and then the final question is what is the perception of the PSC of, well, let me rephrase this. According to the PEC and their work they do, what is the perceptions of public servants towards the PSC? And how do those perceptions reflect in or influence the behavior of public servants in the discharge of their duties? Have they done any studies in that regard, any research, any semi-structured, try and gauge how public servants see the PEC and their role and how that can influence their behavior? Has there been anything like that? And if there hasn't, I just really want to suggest that research like that is done. And if there has been research, well, what has been the outcome of that? It's a global and ethical. I just want to get some input from the colleagues on that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Bradstreet. Honourable Dango, please yours.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation and the presenters. My question is the following. It's the question of performance agreements, how they are structured. If they are structured, in fact, to obtain the national objectives, or, in fact, if they are structured so that the person that is actually filling out the performance agreements can achieve the minimalist objectives without being penalized for that. I've seen situations where public servants fill in, when they're in the performance agreement, the minimalist position, so they actually can achieve 100% performance. But that is not achieving the objectives of the state. It is not achieving the objectives of the department they're in or the ministry that they're in. Of course, the minister is responsible for outcomes. The DGs are responsible for outputs. And when we're measuring outputs, we're not actually looking at outcomes. Because if we're not getting outcomes, a minimalist position is not going to advance our objectives as a state, as a country, in any department. We need to actually ask the PSC to do training and look at the objectives when people are entering into performance agreements. Right from the minister with the presidency, when they when they present their budget, that's a contract. And the DG with the minister. And then the DG down to the employee that is sitting at the lowest rung. Are we actually designing the performance agreements to obtain objectives? Or are we doing so to do compliance? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Dango. Honorable Apleni.
Thank you very much, Chair. You will pardon me for the camera. The network is very poor. Now, Chair, I will be very short. You know, there is we have a serious problem in this country of people who are deployed or employed in governance, because they were belonging to a certain particular political party. In some cases, you would find that some of those people do not qualify to do their jobs, and it becomes even very hard to train them to be able to perform well. Now, the question that I have is whether has the PSC conducted an assessment of finding out within the public service whether do we still have a huge or large number of such people And if there is any assessment that has been done in that regard, is there a way of making sure that some of those people are being removed in those positions? I'm trying to be careful to not to say that they should be removed, and right people are being placed so that the work of the government can continue as it should. That is the only question I have, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Aplani. You are putting the chairperson in a very awkward situation. That's the truth from my side, Chair, Honorable Chair.
Sorry, Chairperson, I just wanted to get to the specific document. The document I was referring to, Chairperson, can you hear me now?
Yes. Can you repeat
what you It's called the Explanatory Manual of the Public Service, and it's called A Practical Guide to Ethical Dilemmas in the Workplace. And what I have is that it was lost in 2002. That was the document I was referring to earlier. And so the question to the PSC is, has there been any update on that document since 20 years ago? Thanks a lot.
Can you repeat that?
I can indeed, Chairperson. It's the Explanatory Manual on the Code of Conduct for the Public Service, and the title is A Practical Guide to Ethical Dilemmas in the Workplace. It was brought out by the Public Service Commission in 2002. That was the first edition. I just wanted to, so as part of my question earlier about ethics, has that document been reproduced, altered, amended in any way to cater for where we are as a country right now? Thank you.
Thank you, Tim.
For the opportunity. And no, the one thing I wanted to check, Chair, with the Commission, is to, given that the act that they operate from is the 1997 act, whether they have had a look at this act and perhaps see whether there could be some changes, because I mean it's 1997, there has been some development also around the issues of good governance challenges. But they operating based on that 1997. I just wanted to check if they had perhaps a look and see whether there should be a review with the intention to make amendments, particularly also adding perhaps a provision on remedies, including perhaps penalties. The only area that I see in the act that got to do with the penalties when there is on the obstruction of the work of the commissioner. But other than that, there are no penalties with regard to a failure by those in the public service to adhere to the constitutional principles. The last issue is with the evaluation of the HODs. I just wanted to check if in the process of evaluating the HODs, did they find that there are HODs who were not supposed to be in the position they currently are occupying? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, from my side. Chairperson Vigeni, you did earlier on when you started allude to the framework on the professionalization of public service, which has been approved by the cabinet. It will be important just to get a sense in terms of the what is the thrust of that policy document, even if you can share it with us. I think this will also help us in terms of understanding the interface that we have with the National School of Governance, particularly the nature of the relationship and the extent to which they play a positive role in terms of intervening at the level of the professionalization of the public service. the second one relates to the from the team, from Chairperson's assessment, the situation at provincial level, the work that our commissioners are doing, is there any challenge that that you would need intervention from the national PSC level? I'm raising this point informed by the challenges that we have with the Mpumalanga, which ultimately led to your having interaction with the speaker. The impact of such vacancies, particularly at the leadership level. So the last one relates to the issue of compliance in terms of Regulation 22 of the public service. particularly giving its emphasis on the obligation on the part of the head of department to take charge of the ethics and corruption risk. Two, they need to ensure that there is ethics management strategy in place to confront and deter unethical conduct and acts of corruption, and also an obligation to refer allegations of corruption to the relevant law enforcement agency. The question that I want to pose is the PSC able to provide an overview of the level of compliance at provincial departments level in respect of those listed areas under Regulation 2? I think this is quite important because the scrutiny of financial disclosure forms reveals that there are still senior management service members that are repeated offenders in terms of other provinces. So therefore, it becomes important that we take charge also of that process. Over to you, Chairperson of the Public Service Commission.
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, for such important questions. Some of them are also assisting in highlighting some of the priorities that we should take into account. Let me start with Honorable Manda Khai. Our mandate is quite broad, and as such, this mandate, Honorable Members, is also speaking to ensuring the effectiveness and efficiency of the public service. So, Honorable Members, that is broad enough. It goes to making sure that the policy advice on good practice in terms of improvement of public service, the promotion of constitutional values of the public service. So it is broad enough, but at the same time made to be specific in some of the areas which are there. So you were correct in raising those issues, but to be more specific, Honorable Members, PSC has taken an extraordinary step of organizing in partnership with the United Nations as well as University of South Africa, a conference, anti-corruption conference in December on the 8th and the 9th. We will also extend invitation to you. At the heart of this is to say, how do we respond to the Zondo Commission reports and all other corruption-related reports, whether it is the PPE scandals or the Nugent Commission or several other commissions at the level of public service. And in that, we have invited the president of the country, we have invited the Speaker of Parliament, we have invited the Chief Justice, so that all the three branches of government are able to lead in the process of such responses. We are part of the Forum of Institutions Supporting Democracy, which is your Chapter 9 institutions. They are part of the organizing team, and they'll also be presenting. That includes your AG, your Gender Commission, your Human Rights Commission, and several other entities within that pool, the Public Protector, and so on. So we're doing some work in terms of the response to the state capture. And I do think that the approval of the framework for professionalization of public service, in essence, is another very important, concrete, practical response, if well implemented, which will go a long way in making sure that issues of corruption are limited and service delivery becomes more effective through the creation of a single public administration and ending the kind of fragmentation that we have. Indeed, we have had a direct meeting with the AG, led by Zagane, to discuss some of the reports that the AG often have on the public service. One of the areas that we have identified is that weaknesses within the human resources, within the supply chain, are the biggest contributors to the loopholes which cause the kind of corruption that we've seen, in addition, of course, to the issue of unlawful instruction and poor management of the political administrative interface, which sometimes become an interference. And on the issue of accounting to the NCOP, we were always open ourselves because we said we account to Parliament, whatever organ of Parliament. So we're happy that the matter now has been settled with the legal advice, and we look forward to working with you and providing all these reports because they assist your oversight. They will assist the work that you are doing. On the lifestyle audit, indeed, PSC is doing some work to ensure that now that it has been adopted, it's one of the things that we are going to make sure that we oversee and make sure that departments are implementing what is provided for. And we've been working closely with DPSA as they are issuing instructions and guidelines for implementation. With the whistleblowers, very specifically, we've had a meeting with HOD of Health in Gauteng, who has received threats after the suspension of the CFO there, knowing that the other whistleblower from the same department was killed. So in our meeting with Minister Cele and all the leaders within the police, including the commissioners, we raise this particular issue of the protection, not just of whistleblowers, but also investigators. And we are engaging them to get a concrete response, but also to advise where necessary. And the other issue that Honorable Tim brought us referred to the training on ethics. Indeed, in our promotion of principles and values in the Constitution, we are in discussions with the Moral Regeneration. We've had a meeting. We're in discussions with Father Simangaliso Mkhatshwa, who is the head of that, and his team. We have started discussions. I've engaged Professor Rousseau of the Ethics Institute, and we are engaging the National School of Government. The key issue that we are raising is to say, on average, it's clear that people may know cognitively what these values and principles are. But the biggest hurdle, how do you make sure that people internalize this and these values change their attitudes so that we have a new ethos in public service? Because you'll find that people who do wrong can recite most of these principles. Some of them are even heading some of these institutes, and yet they do the wrong thing. How then do we make sure that the change of behavior arise from the interventions? We're in discussions with the training institutions, universities. We're in discussions with the National School of Government and so forth to make sure that we do find a mechanism to this effect. And we're also in discussions with the UN agencies like your UNDP to say, help us with comparative examples elsewhere where behavioral change came because people made these values intrinsic. Because this is the most serious element, and we've even said our approach is to move from just rules-based to include value-based public service. Of course, the issue of wrongful instructions and the political administrative interface, the professionalization of public service, and all the details of what interventions are there is meant to ensure that this is limited or contained and regulated. So the approval of that framework goes a long way to ensure that such interference will no longer be a norm. And as such, issues of performance management, which are professionalized with experts involved, right from recruitment up to performance management and the reviewing of the framework of performance management, Honorable Dango, it's one of the key things that PSC is seized with, working, of course, with DPSA, working with, the School of Government and all other relevant entities. Because one of the key things is we can't go on the same way. Performance management system needs an overhaul for greater impact so that the malicious compliance is not the indicator of success or failure. Then very quickly, I'll then ask my colleagues also to answer some of the areas I might have left out. There is a public service bill, public service commission bill, which is underway. We've had discussions. It is ready. It has served even before the portfolio committee. We've briefed the speaker on that. And it is meant to give more teeth and more independence to the public service commission. And we will be a happy chairperson in the interest of time to send you via email this framework of professionalization as well as the draft bill so that it speaks to the issues that you are talking to. I will now ask Dr. Sidibe, our DDG, if there is anything that she can add, especially on some of the updating of policies regarding the code of conduct for the public service.
Yes, I guess your team will follow suit.
Thanks very much, Professor Fikeni. Mr. Malachi is also here. He will assist with some of the questions. Let me just address a few areas that Professor Fikeni has not alluded to. Starting with what is the perception of public servants of the PSC? Have we conducted a study in that area? We have not necessarily done a study like that in a long time, but currently the PSC is in the process of conducting such a study, not just looking at the perception of public servants, but looking at the perception of all stakeholders. But I just need to indicate that from our informal engagements with various stakeholders when we do different types of our work, whether it being investigations in grievances, public administration investigations, inspections, and so forth, public servants and members of the community who have benefited through the intervention of the PSC do appreciate the work of the PSC. Equally, we do have instances where, especially public servants who may not have benefited directly through the intervention of the PSC, but often they appreciate an improved understanding of the prescript and what is expected of them once the PSC has engaged with them and the various departments. But like I said, the current study that the PSC is conducting will then be able to give us an informed perspective of, you know, whether we are positively perceived or not, or whether our existence is seen differently by different stakeholders. Let's go to the issue of the performance agreements and how they are structured. We have done a lot of studies, rapid assessments, full-scale studies, workshops, and so forth in the areas of performance management and development. Our findings often result in, you know, mixed results, in the sense that you can find in the same institution performance agreements that are tied, that are directly linked with the strategic documents of the department, and where the strategy themselves are directly linked in a very strong manner with the medium-term expenditure framework and so forth. But there would also be instances of what we would refer to as target gaming, where the targets that are set in some performance agreements are extremely loose and weak and not as strong as what the departmental strategies are saying. But having said that, this is an area that we have been engaging with the DPSA on, and we have recently had an engagement with DPSA again, and they are in the process of reviewing the PMDS system. And one of the biggest challenges that we have found over the years, and DPSA has now finally understood and agreed, is that the PMDS, to a greater degree, was negatively influenced by the fact that it was closely tied with a remuneration or bonus scheme. And we have recommended for many years that the two must be delinked, and PSC took those recommendations a year or two into action, and hence the performance bonuses were gradually reduced up to they don't exist anymore, because we want to go back into proper performance management and development independent of financial incentives. The issue of whether the evaluations that the PSC has conducted has ever revealed if there are any HODs who were not supposed to be appointed. Our evaluations are not necessarily designed to test that, but let me indicate this. Before an HOD is appointed, the Department of Public Service and Administration has oversight over the entire process before any recommendation can be submitted. to cabinet at the national level. In the provinces, the processes are overseen by the Office of the Premier. So from where we are sitting as the PSC, the HODs whose performance evaluations we have conducted, we did not necessarily find anything amiss with those HODs. But there is a qualifier to the statement. Very few HODs, if we know the turnover rate of HODs in the public service, that it ranges between 2.9 years to 3.2 years in the public service on average. There is a very small number of HODs who were able to serve their five-year term, and some of them to actually even have the five-year term renewed once or twice and so forth. And these are the types of HODs that often, when we do performance evaluations, they are the HODs that we would be evaluating. I think their work speaks for itself. Some of them have moved from different portfolios to others to make an impact. So it's very difficult when you have a very small number of HODs whose lifespan in the public service is strong enough that they actually even reach a performance assessment period. I think a number of the other HODs who stay for the 3 years, 4 years, as the turnover rate ratios indicate, some of them don't actually even get evaluated because of irreconcilable differences between them and executive authorities. Their assessments are never conducted. Documentation is never submitted, so there is no performance evaluation. But that does not mean those people are poor performers. I think the notion of irreconcilable differences sometimes is linked up with issues of ethics, conduct, and you know, the types of leadership between an HOD and an EA. And some of them could easily be linked up with instances that we have witnessed around life as Idimeni, the state capture, and a number of those unacceptable excuses or practices that are identified. The last point that I just want to comment on very quickly before I ask Mr. Malachi to come in relates to training on ethics. Mr. Malachi will talk to the Code of Conduct because they've been doing some work there. The National School of Government, PSC for a start, does not have a mandate to conduct training. We do not have the capacity to conduct training because this is a fairly specialized area. If you have to develop curriculum that has to meet particular standards, we don't have that capacity. But the National School of Government does have the capacity. And in fact, they do have a training course on ethics in the public service. And in 2020-2021, the course was made available free of charge to public servants. And there was a lot of uptake from a lot of public servants. From our engagement with the NSG, and we have seen them when we request them to develop particular training programs, they do have the capacity to tailor-make their programs for other sectors and spheres. So if there is a need for training for public representatives, including local government, I am of the opinion, if I can speak for the NSG, that they have the capacity to tailor-make such. And currently they are able to run training programs for large numbers of people at a time. I think I will stop at that and request that Malachi. If I can address the issue of visiting schools and whether our mandate includes looking at service delivery within the schools, issues of textbooks and infrastructure. When we do inspections in schools, these are some of the issues that we have looked at. We've done quite a bit of work around inspections, looking at the availability of textbooks and other learner support teacher materials, including looking at basic issues of infrastructure. And in some instances, then the PSC is also able to engage the relevant departments that have the responsibility to play a part. If it is infrastructure, we are also looking at departments responsible for infrastructure, public works, and the related, whereas when it comes to learner-teacher support materials and the basics that are needed by teachers, those recommendations are sent to the Department of Education. why we may not be seen to be having the impact that is desired across all the areas. The PSC is a very small institution. Some of the methodologies that we employ, whether it be service delivery inspections or citizens forum, they can be used by different departments to troubleshoot in the same manner that the PSC does. So what we normally do is a deep dig, and where we find problems, we report they are dealt with, and the expectation is the department should use our findings, not just to address the problems in the schools that we have only identified, but also to look at all other schools that might be in a similar predicament. And repeatedly, we do try to follow up on the implementation of our recommendations with the Department of Education and other affected departments. Some recommendations are implemented quickly, some take a very long time, especially those relating to infrastructure. Let me request Ntate Malatjie. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members of your committee. Chairperson of the PSC, Prof. Ikeni. I'm going to take some of the questions that were posed to us. Allow me to switch off the camera. I just did it so that you can see who is talking to you at this point in time. The question you posed regarding the extent of compliance with the requirements, the Regulation 1 of 2016, which is contained in Regulations 22 and 23 regarding ethics infrastructure and conducting ethics and corruption risks assessments. We have conducted a study that spanned over a period of 3 years. We completed it in the preceding financial year, 2021-2022. So that report is available. But at a high level, I can share that most provincial departments, the study took into account both national and provincial departments, all of them. To what extent the leadership commitment to integrity and establishing ethics infrastructure. Most provincial departments do not have a dedicated ethics unit. What they do, they allocate, they assign duties as ad hoc to employees who already have their day-to-day duties like in HR, in auditing, internal audit, then they give them ethics function. We have made a proposal to DPSA also to issue an advisory to department to establish ethics unit so that the ethics function is no longer just a compliance exercise, but to make sure that ethics is internalized in all the departments. The report can be made available to yourselves and the honorable committee members. I'll move on to the next one. The training Dr. Sidibe has captured that sufficiently. I'll just want to remark on the perception of the public employees towards the PSC. There is a study that was done by the Ethics Institute of Southern Africa, which is led by Professor Dion Rousseau. That study found that employees of government still have confidence in the PSC. And what they were assessing there is whether they will refer complaints or allegations of corruption to PSC. So that rating was very high. And that report is also available if you will need it, just for your information and records. On the Professor Fikeni has covered one area where we plan ethics and coordinate those events that are happening nationally, focusing not only in the public service, but also civil society participation, academia, as well as the business and labor, where we interrogate issues of ethics. And the one such, he rightfully said, is in December. We already had another one in April, which reflected on the revelations by the state capture, failure of governance, what is the way forward that we need to come up with. And that seminar was a very well attended. It did not only articulate what were the problems, but there were concrete proposals of what needed to happen beyond the State Capture Commission's report. What form of implementation should all of us, including law enforcement, all the agencies that support democracy, what roles must we play as we to make sure that the state capture does not recur? With regard to the explanatory manual on ethical dilemmas in the public service, there is a recent manual that has been reviewed, and that was done to take into account the issue of unlawful instructions. Prof. Fikeni spoke about the political administrative interface, where we found that there is more often than not problems arise at that level. We then reviewed that manual on handling of ethical dilemmas in the workplace, and the latest version is the one of March 2022, and it no longer reads as it was, but it reads unlawful instructions and handling of ethical dilemmas in the workplace. And this is the manual we engage with all departments. And the latest engagement was on the 13th of September 2022, where all heads of HR, all ethics officers were invited to come and engage with us on their pertinent roles in departments. And that was also very well attended. Let me check one issue that I may have left. The issue of lifestyle audits, what role do we play as the Public Service Commission? The project of lifestyle audit is led by the DPSA. Our contribution is in so far as the provision of what senior managers would have disclosed to us, what we would have scrutinized, and those flagged suspicious transactions or disclosures, then we share them with the heads of departments, because the function is entrusted in the heads of all departments. So we provide support to them as and when they have an issue or issues they are dealing with regarding lifestyle of identified managers. But also we scrutinize all the disclosures of people who are in the, all the employees of finance, supply chain, those who are dealing with tenders and are designated officials. I will move on. Do we do investigations on procurement irregularities? Yes, we do. For instance, there is a huge case we are dealing with in the Eastern Cape, which is centering around procurement irregularities, scholar transport, massive amounts spent there, we are going to make sure that justice is served regarding that matter. Collaboration with Auditor General, we have an MOU with AGSA. Once they have found irregularities relating to finances, ours is to monitor implementation of disciplinary cases and finalization thereof, so that there is consequence management on these matters that are discovered. And we issue a report yearly, and that report can be shared with you and be presented to you, all the details that reflect in that report. The other impact that I'll just need to share with the members of the esteemed committee, we conduct investigations as the Public Service Commission on appointment irregularities as well as procurement irregularities. Now, at the conclusion thereof, once there is substance on the matter under investigation, we recommend certain actions. One of them is disciplinary action, then the other is cancellation of contract, cancellation of appointments through a court process, because you don't just cancel it like that once you have entered into it. You do it through a There are areas where impact can be seen. It's just that the sketch of corruption has gone way too deep. We have a mammoth task to uproot all of it. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. Then I see Honorable Khai's hand is up. Honorable Khai and Honorable Chin, I guess that's follow up. Honorable Khai?
No, thank you very much, Chair, again. I just wanted to find out with regard to the anti-corruption hotline. I'm reminded of a situation where we had a plenary session in the NCOP. It was questions to the executive, the minister responsible for evaluation and monitoring. The question related to the presidential hotline.
Recording in progress.
I'm not sure, because some of the challenges, especially with regard to challenges of good governance, you find them in the state-owned entities as well as the local government. I was just checking whether the application, because it is now limited at national departments and provincial departments, whether the scope has been widened to cover the state-owned entities as well as the local government, or is it a matter that first should be addressed in the constitution? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Professor.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you to the presenter. I'm sorry, I didn't catch the name, who spoke to the study of perceptions towards the PSC, and also the updated handbook relating to unlawful instructions and ethical. Committee get both of those, both that study and that updated handbook, or can we be updated handbook?
A bit difficult to tell your message, Honorable Tim, but I think the commitment from the yes, can repeat what you were saying.
Okay, if you can hear me now, Chairperson, it was just to ask that the PEC provide us with that study relating to the perceptions of the PEC and the updated 2022 version of that handbook relating to unlawful instructions and ethical dilemmas. Thank you.
Honourable members, let me then again give over to Prof. Just in terms of follow-ups.
Thank you very much. I'll make it very quick. The first one to Honourable Tim, we will send all the documents we have noted and ask our office to email them to the members, especially the updated versions. In as far as the scope of the bill itself extending to local government, yes, the bill does mention that, but more important, the new framework for professionalization of public service is trying to create a single administration through a series of legislations to ensure that SOEs, local government, state security and several other entities, including employees of parliament, are under a single administration so that you have standardization of rules and standardization of compliance and practices. On the issue that DDG Sidibe said, we don't provide training, but we do provide workshops which are also training, but not to the accredited level where there is a short intervention needed. Then the last part I would address is the issue of qualifications. We do have a current rapid assessment of qualifications of SMS members, because some of them were reported not to have qualifications. And some we further followed up with DPSA and the department concerned to say some had not updated their information. Therefore, the number is expected to reduce, including those legacy ones of those who are about to now go on pension, in as far as the issue of qualifications or people appointed without requirements. And again, the standardization of requirements for appointments and the professionalization and the review of the appointment criteria is going to eliminate the scope of people who are employed without the requisite qualifications. But I'll ask DDG Malazi to speak to the issue of the anti-corruption hotline.
Thank you, Prof.
I also just want to mention that I am with fellow commissioner Yasmin Barkas, who is the resident commissioner in KZN, who is part of this meeting following the proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Prof. I will be brief as well. With regard to the National Anti-Corruption Hotline, it is monitored all the time and calls are answered. There was a time when it was being seized, during which time we rerouted the calls to mobile devices still which were answered. But in the evening, callers are requested to record a message in a recorder that is stationed here. Then we upload the recorded reports in the morning, first thing when we come in. That is all on the National Anti-Corruption Hotline. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. I guess that honorable members are now more clearer in terms of the further information given through responses and replies to the question posed. At this juncture, I must then take this opportunity to, on behalf of the Committee on Transport, Public Service and Administration, Public Works and Infrastructure, to express our sincere gratitude to Professor and the fellow commissioners and the management team for honoring our appointment as the committee to come and give us an update in terms of the progress that the Public Service Commission is making in terms of its programmatic areas. Indeed, we are leaving this meeting fully conversant in terms of the key areas that you are working on. But more than that, I think progress around your programs. What is key also is the fact that you continue with your good work around clean audit, which is a clear indication that you are leading by example, and therefore it must be recorded as a shining example of what entities of our state must do, precisely by virtue of the fact that you owe your existence to Chapter 10 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, but also quite instrumental in terms of what Section 196 of the Constitution provides, particularly in terms of the promotion of values and principles essential in Section 195. And we have no doubt that you will continue to be our eyes and ears in terms of ensuring that you provide leadership around human resource management, around handling labor relations, around ensuring that where there is a need for investigations, that is followed up. But also key to your work is ensuring that you promote professional ethics in our public service. Promote professional ethics in the public service, and you do that through a time and again making a reflection in terms of the work that we are doing. We are happy that at this juncture there is a process unfolding in terms of amending the legislation that gave birth to the PSC, and at some point we will definitely get an opportunity for an update in terms of the thrust of the legislation. And on that note, Prof, you are excused. Have a wonderful afternoon. Any last word, Prof?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much to fellow members of the Select Committee on behalf of the PSC. May you have a wonderful day ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Prof.
Thank you very much.
Right. Honourable members, we will then move to the next item on the agenda, which is the minutes of the last meeting that we had. Enrico? Thank you, honourable members. The minutes of the meeting of the 19th of October, where as a state committee, we were hosting the Department of Transport to give us an update in terms of the white paper on national rail policy. Those are the members that attended the meeting. And the apologies as recorded. the team led the Department of Transport, Mr. and our team of Parliament.
Sorry, Chair, I don't know if I saw my name there.
Let's go up. You were.
I was present, but I.
Yes.
You are
Chair. Number.
Oh, okay. All right. Yes, I do see. Then.
Three from above. Okay. Yeah. Right. Let's proceed, Enrico. Those are the issues that were conversed from the presentation. From the presentations, the thrust of the policy paper, and then the comments that were made by members. Any correction that the honourable members are picking up? Or subtraction or addition to the minutes as presented. We also then gave an update in terms of the bills that are coming, and we are waiting guidance from the management team. Can we get a move for the adoption of the minutes?
I so move, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Dango. Can you get a second up?
I second, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Khari. Therefore, the minutes of the 19th of October is hereby duly adopted as a true reflection of what transpired in the last meeting. And on that note, can I then take this opportunity to also extend a word of gratitude to all Honorable Members, the parliamentary staff, from the community secretary, the researcher, the content advisor, the media team, also the parliament YouTube, and also the team from our offices for making this meeting a success. And therefore, the meeting is formally adjourned until next week.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, honourable members.